This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and episode 19 of season 2. Now, while it's getting colder outside, we have a real winter warmer for you this week as broadcaster Matt Smith turns up the heat dial on the podcast with a voice absolutely made for broadcast. Now, in the UK, we've heard all about the hand of God, but in NFL circles, it's the voice of God who reigns supreme. For those of you not in the know, that's Matt's moniker in his role on the Around the NFL podcast. And when he speaks, well, you can just hear why. There is much more to Matt's career, though, than 20 seconds of nonsense. Of course, he has spent decades working across the NFL in a variety of roles and currently announces games for the Los Angeles Chargers. There's plenty more besides as well, so I hope you enjoy this chat with one of the nicest people you're likely to meet in media circles. Before we begin, remember you can also watch this episode on NFL Game Pass right now. Just head over to nflgamepass.com to sign up and get access to a world of exclusive NFL content, including this podcast. But if you're staying with us here, let's get to the man with a voice like honey. This is my chat with Matt Money Smith. This, Matt, is the true at-home experience for me because I've actually had a new carpet fitted in the next room. So this is the first podcast I've done where I've actually kept my dogs in this room with me. Okay. One of them sleeps the whole time. The other one is an absolute nutter. So I don't know what's going to happen in the next 25 minutes. But
I'm honored to be on the maiden voyage. I have a chocolate lab that is right there and she is sleeping, and it's interesting. She'll lay there, but if I get a little energy in my voice as we start talking, you very well may see her snout start popping up here. So we're in the same boat.
So that way, 6 foot chocolate lab. She's the one that sleeps for me. This way, red lab, who's an absolute crazy dog. So yeah. So there we go. We've done dogs. Yes. That's covered that off. So as we start this, I thought we'd chat. We have many mutual friends, even though we are separated by about 6,000 miles.
Yeah, right.
We both work with Brian Baldinger. We both work with the Around the NFL podcast heroes. This NFL world is growing. Small world that we work with the same people.
Yeah, it really is. We got Maurice Jones-Drew, I think you've worked with as well. And we've got, of course, the ringleader of us all, Henry. So there's that as well. But yeah, I'm excited. And like I said, it's funny because Baldy and I were doing Vikings Chargers game. And he brought you up and just and how much he loves working with you and working over there. So it's I'm excited. I'm very excited to do this.
Good. So we're going to get into some of your various roles, but a lot of people on this side of the pond will know you for being the Around the NFL's voice of God. So I wonder, when you've got all of those awards sitting behind you in that shot, and when you've got all these different hats that you wear, a lot of people will associate you with 20 seconds of nonsense.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, that was kind of my first job at NFL Network. I was hired to do a show. I think it was called, if I remember right, because it was a long time ago, NFL Replay. And it was 15 minutes of a game that was played on Sunday, and they would cut it up. I don't know if you remember it. And I would voice just kind of these single sentences throughout that, you know, and to their credit, they didn't make it overbearing with VOs or stats or any. It was just the game that was cut up. And I was there to kind of set the scene for each of the quarters or signature plays. And that's how I got started. I would pull into the NFL Network parking lot. I would go into a VO booth. I would cut maybe 5 or 6 of those games over the course of an hour to 90 minutes, and I'd be on my way. So,
were you a fan of the NFL anyway, like to the point where you might know John Facenda doing the famous NFL films? I mean, you don't want to put too much pressure on yourself when it's your first gig at the NFL Network, but that's the first thing that thought of when you said voiceovers and this footage, you know?
Yeah, I think, I grew up, and, you know, I'm 48, so I grew up kind of when NFL films was a big deal and it would show up on Saturday. We also had a thing called This Week in Baseball, where it was kind of the week's happenings were chronicled in these 1 hour shows. And so, yes, I grew up on John Facenda, on those amazing films and those reels, and, you know, finding out what you missed. Cause, you know, when I was young, we didn't have satellite, we didn't have Sunday, you know, we didn't have the Sunday ticket kind of, you know, red zone stuff. So I just watched, you know, the Bears game, and maybe there was one other game that would come on, and then you'd get Monday Night Football, and that was the extent of it. So you would kind of catch up on the rest of the league, and a lot of that was narrated by Facenda. So certainly I knew who he was. It's funny, Neil, like, you know, you never really think of yourself in those terms, understandably. He's arguably the greatest voiceover guy in sports history, but I did have a lot of people growing up, because I kind of got this voice when I was 14 say, oh, you have to get into radio, you have to get into voice. So people had always told me that. So when it started coming together, it was kind of like, oh, I guess this is what I was meant to do. So that 20 seconds of absurdity is exactly that, but it's kind of what I'm supposed to do.
I was going to ask you about growing up, but we'll get to that in a second then, but because you've led me naturally to the voice. So I do hours and hours of TV here with Sky Sports NFL. I don't really want to watch it back. I don't really like my voice. And a lot of people don't like their voice when they listen to it back. How can you not love your voice? It's like it's been dipped in syrup. I mean, what a gift. Right.
Yeah, it is funny. I'm just like you. And I think, you know, you often hear people say this, and it's true. You know, the voice that we, you know, share with the world is not the one we hear coming back to us.
Right.
So it's odd. When you listen to yourself back, I don't think you hear what other people hear. It's a very weird thing. So you're constantly critiquing, like, wait a minute, I know how that sounded going out. Why does it not sound that way coming back? So it's a very odd thing, especially when it's supposed to be something professional, you know, and that you get paid to do, and you feel like you've let them down because it's not how you heard it in your own ears.
So growing up, were you an NFL fan? You mentioned they're watching the Chicago Bears. So did you grow up in that area? Tell us where you grew up and how much the NFL was a part of your life.
Yeah, I did. I grew up in Northwest Indiana, which is the state that's right next to Illinois, where Chicago is. And in my particular town, Hammond, is like literally I grew up on a street called State Line Boulevard. So when I walked out my front door, I crossed our street and I was in Illinois. That's how close we were, even though I was in a completely different state, to Chicago. We lived probably about 25, 30 minutes from Soldier Field. So my family, not my immediate family, my dad and my mom weren't necessarily big sports fans, but my grandmother was. Just figure that one out. She was, and so was my grandfather. So she watched us a lot. Both my parents worked and games were always on. So I grew up a huge Chicago Cubs baseball fan and a huge Chicago Bears football fan, Chicago Bulls basketball, all the Chicago teams, Blackhawks hockey. So yes, I grew up a big, big sports fan with an older brother who also absolutely loved, you know, you would play football in the park. Like the kids in the neighborhood would all get together and we would all play neighborhood football in the park every day, you know, as much as we could, or baseball, whatever that was. So yeah, I grew up in a very sports heavy environment.
So we're almost the same age. I'm 49. So I'm working out the timeline. So that's Jim McMahon, Willie Gault, 85 yes. Bears, all of that sort of group.
Yeah, Walter Payton. I remember. So Walter Payton was kind of my first, my first sports crush, if you will. You know, the Bears were terrible. When I remember starting to watch them in the late 70s, they were not good. And Walter Payton was sensational. So you basically just watched to see what incredible things Walter Payton would do, because you knew the team wasn't going to win. You know, they were 4-win season, 6-win. And then all of a sudden, you know, kind of in 1981, 82, they start getting good. And here comes this defense with Dan Hampton and Steve McMichael. And that side of the ball is getting really good. And Ditka's this huge personality, you know, that as a little kid, you wished was your dad. You're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if Ditka was my dad? You know, things like that. Not. You start thinking about, yeah, probably not. And then, yeah, that very special season of 1985. I can remember, and I think I still have some photos of it. Getting a haircut at home where I don't remember if it was my mom or my grandma, but they shaved, you know, white walls onto the side of my head to look like Jim McMahon. And I'd just wear Jim McMahon jerseys all day, every day, the same stinky one day in and day out, and mirrored sunglasses. Yeah, I mean, it absolutely took over our neighborhood, our childhood for that very special 12 months.
Fantastic. I'm also fascinated with living on a state line. I'm wondering if you know if you can get up to more mischief in your backyard than you can in your front yard.
It is, you know, it's funny you say that, because yes, we could get into more trouble in our front yard in Illinois, because right there was what we call a forest preserve. So it's this cordoned off area where you can't build anything, no homes, no shopping areas. It's just trees. And it would go for like maybe 3 square miles. And so you would just get on your bike and you'd pedal in there. And yes, believe me, growing up, as I got a little bit older into my teenage years, we got a little sideways in that particular spot. That's for sure.
Fantastic. So tell me about your route into broadcasting. Obviously, you had the voice, you needed to get that experience. Was it always sports? Tell us about those kind of early years and how you got into it.
Yeah, it was not. So when I got to college, I went to university, a place called Pepperdine here in Southern California. That's how I made my way here. So when I was there, my freshman year, like the first week I was at school, I went to the meeting for their college radio station, KMBU. And when I showed up, they basically said, oh, you know, sorry, but freshmen don't get their own shows. You know, you can work your way up. You can work behind the scenes. You can, you know, make cart. Back then, music was played on these things called carts, and you could load the music onto a cart that would get jammed into the machine and then play. So at the end of the meeting, I approached the program director and said, do you have anyone to do a Grateful Dead hour? And because that just seemed to be something that every college radio station had, you would have an hour, 2 hours, or, you know, you'd play a live concert over the course of 5 hours of the Grateful Dead. And he's like, you know what? No, we don't. And I said, well, can I do the Grateful Dead hour? And he said, absolutely. If you're a big Deadhead, sure. So that was kind of my first gig is I did the Grateful Dead hour. And from there, I ended up meeting, I worked in the admissions office because I had to for my financial aid requirements and scholarship and things like that. So I met a girl whose boyfriend worked in the record business and said, hey, you work at the radio station, you're into music. They're looking for interns at Polygram and Polydor. And I said, great, I'd love to. So I ended up getting an internship there. In music. And then that led to my getting an internship at the commercial radio station here in town. You may know and may have heard of K-Rock, 106.7 K-Rock. So the alternative rock station, the indie rock station kind of here in Los Angeles. So that's where I got my start commercially. And it was music. And I mean, I can go on a million different roads from there. So I'll stop there and let you ask the next question. Well, that's how I got into radio.
Yeah. So there's music and commercial radio there. And I wonder how much sports was still calling you. And now when you do, you still have a radio show, right? You do NFL Network. But I wonder how much, because you wear a lot of different hats, but you get to call those Chargers games now, play by play for the Los Angeles Chargers. And you talk NFL Network. How much does... I'm not saying they're going to love the sport more, but how much was the NFL pulling you, and how much do you get a kick out of covering the NFL?
Yeah. So back then, not at all. You know, my career path was going to be music. I, for whatever reason, kind of had this, I don't know what you would call it. I don't want to sound too arrogant. I just kind of had this ability to hear hooks and hear hits. And so I was pulled into the music side of the radio station. I worked on the morning show. That's how I got my stupid nickname, because everybody's got to have a nickname on a morning show on the radio. But I also, they were like, you know, the people that ran the station, credit to them, you know, they were older in their mid 30s and they're like, hey, you're a 19-year-old kid that's at college that probably knows a heck of a lot more about what kids are listening to than we do. Do you want to be in our music department and, you know, work in there part time and come to our music meetings and share stuff you're listening to with us that maybe we could end up playing on the station? So that ended up going very well. I ended up kind of bringing them a few things that worked out extremely well. And that led kind of to this path of music. A lot of the record labels knew who I was. And when you have record company people, they're looking for any angle. So they're like, well, if I can't get to Kevin or Gene or Darcy, there's this guy, Matt, who works on the morning show, but apparently he's in the music department. So they would just start throwing music at me like crazy. Can you listen to this? Can you listen to this? And I just fell in love with it. You know, I absolutely enjoyed driving. It was a bit of a long drive from Malibu, where I was going to school, to Burbank, where the station was. And I had to go, you know, as a morning show. So I'm in college, taking a full load. I'm working at a restaurant as a valet to make money so I can afford to go to college. And then at 3:30, 4 o'clock a.m., alarm's going off and I'm hopping in my car to get to Burbank by the time 5 a.m. shows up and I can work on this morning show. So that was all music. As I'm driving around and moving around, I was listening to a lot of music. So that's, that was going to be my path, Neil. It was going to be music. And just to kind of quickly button maybe that side of things, I ended up becoming the music director at K-Rock, which you choose every single song and where it's going to get played in every minute of every day. You're responsible for finding new artists. So I did that for like 3 years. I worked at a record company. I worked at London Records. I worked at Slash Records. I worked at DreamWorks Records. And I think ultimately my path was going to be probably like I thought it was going to be president of DreamWorks Records, that I was going to kind of follow Mo Austin and Lenny Warnker, who are these legendary record executives that seemed to take a liking to me and kind of were fast tracking me on that path. And then David Geffen decided to sell the record label to the Interscope, and I just did not get along with the people over there, pulled the ripcord on that, became the music director at K-Rock full time. So that's the music side. I'm going to make a long answer longer just for a quick second.
Go for it.
When I was at the morning show, Jimmy Kimmel was our sports guy. So he was still working in radio only, and he was a comedy writer and a sports guy. And he and I hit it off. We just ended up having a great relationship, and he knew I loved sports. And so I would be part of a lot of his bits. And that's how I got on the air with the morning show, is Jimmy was the one who pulled me in and kind of made a character out of me and used my voice for different things that he wanted to use. So that's where that planted the seeds for my sporting career. So that's a lot. And I'm sorry it went so long.
No, but
that's
good. All of that. Hey, when you can ask a question and someone gives you a good answer and a long answer, I'm happy with that.
Right.
I have a follow-up now, though. So the most famous person you've interviewed in the music world and the most famous from the NFL world, who are the, give me a couple of names.
Well, I guess the biggest would probably be Bono, right? I don't know if it gets bigger than that. Yeah, I think that because, you know, we were modern rock, so there was no, you know, there's no Stones or any, you know, Beatles, like there's none of that. So I guess in the world of kind of modern rock, that would be the biggest. I don't think it gets much bigger than that. In the sports world, boy, that's tough. I guess, you know, baseball wise, it would have to be just Clayton Kershaw, who pitches for the Dodgers. He's probably going to go down as the greatest pitcher of his generation and maybe the greatest pitcher of all time. So I think even though I talk to him a lot and we've interviewed him a lot and I'm around him a lot because we're the Dodgers station where my radio show is, it probably still doesn't get bigger than that. But, you know, I talked to John Wooden, who's a legendary college basketball coach. The NFL, it's like you said, Neil, when you get into the middle of it, you just talk to everyone.
So many, right? People sometimes say that to me, and I've interviewed Marino, Elway, you know, right. Montana, right? You, it's hard to pick one because they're all kind of at that up here. So, yeah,
it's funny. Like if you and I'm sure you've experienced this, but when you go to the Super Bowl and you go to this thing called Radio Row,
oh my goodness,
so many of those legends just are walking around, right? So Joe Montana will sit down with you and hand you a pair of shoes because he wants to sell Skechers, and then Troy Aikman, my favorite one ever. Was we had Troy Aikman and we had Jim Kelly back to back. So Troy Aikman sits with us and he hands us this bag of apples because he's promoting Washington apples. Okay. He gets up and as we're finishing up the interview with him, Jim Kelly is waiting to sit down, right? He's waiting for us to finish. And he and Troy exchange a few words. Troy picks up his giant bag of apples to go to his next interview. And Jim Kelly sits down and he goes, "What's up, guys? I'm here promoting Baby Ruth candy bars." I'm like, well, there we go. We had apples from Aikman and we got candy bars from Jim Kelly, both ends of the spectrum.
I've been through that from the other side at Radio Row, where I've been sitting for Sky Sports and they brought round JJ Watt. And I knew JJ from doing stuff over here in the UK. And the agent's like, "The UK? No, we're not promoting that." And so they just keep walking. So luckily, people like Jim Kelly, Joe Montana, they all come over around the London games. So I just have to really work relationships because they can't peddle their wares on British TV as easily. So, but it's the same sort of challenge, I guess. I'd love to know about the Chargers and the play-by-play stuff and how, when you're right in that, how much that gets your kind of juices flowing. You know, think back to, I guess two sides of it really, like all those close losses last year, all the heartbreaking ways they lost and how you have to describe that. And now what you're seeing with this growth of Justin Herbert, take me into the booth there and what that's like play by play and how much you enjoy that.
Yeah. So, you know, here, and I don't know if you guys have it there, but, you know, so we have the radio broadcasts are local. They are,
yeah, you know, that's great. It's liberating. Exactly. You can just be so biased.
Totally. Yeah. Right. The national broadcasts, I mean, the television broadcasts are all national. So the only way to get a local angle is on the radio. And I think, you know, because I came from national, I came from the national side of things. You know, I started in local. I started with the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers here in town. So I did that for 5 years. And then I moved on to football and I did college football and I did NFL football and I did college basketball. So I kind of had this national perspective for, I think it was 6 years before I got the Charger job. So I had already kind of called games in that manner. And I think that helped, you know, I've never worked for a team before. I've always tried to call it even on both sides. Now, I think you also recognize, well, there's a reason why they have their own broadcast, because the people listening are fans of this team and they don't want you to be neutral. They want you to have a little bit of a bias, but at the same time, they want you to hold the team responsible. So I kind of look through, I look at the game almost how I would think the fan is. If the fan is getting upset, And they're getting a little chapped about, you know, these turnovers and I don't like the play calling. And, you know, if I do it with Daniel Jeremiah, if like we see the same thing, I think it's important to share that. Like, you know, that's an interesting play call there. Things like that. You know, the last thing you want to do is be snarky or have malice in your voice. It's just observational. And credit to the Chargers, they've been great. You know, like you mentioned the last couple of years and all the close losses and just some bad coaching decisions and things like that. And we talked to Anthony Lynn before the game, after the game. We talked to him once in the middle of the week on our radio show. Could not have been more professional, nicer guy. But every now and then you'd call him out on the broadcast and say, that's a bad use of time, of clock management. You need to call a timeout. You know, we would do that. And, you know, again, for the Chargers, I give them a ton of credit. They had one, I think I had one issue where their punter said that I was taking, you know, that he had friends call him and told him I was really taking shots at him and being mean and, you know, essentially making fun of how bad, and that just wasn't the case. And so I had to sit down with them and I said, well, just do me a favor, you know, instead of calling me and riling me all up about somebody's friend telling him what he thought I sounded like, make sure just go back and listen to it and then play it for the guy himself and decide if he's really upset about it, you know, or if that's just somebody that's getting all freaked out because their friend's playing like crap and they think I'm saying something bad. So
we'll be back with more from Matt after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast.
This is Jack Crawford and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Hello, Neil. Been a busy week with Thanksgiving.
It has been, Gary. Yes, very busy. So, yeah, always a fun time of the year because obviously you get three bonus games, but also on a Thursday, but also just gets us kind of set up for what's the business end of this season. It feels like once you get past Thanksgiving, it's when teams kind of try and find the, as our American friends would say, try and find the gas pedal and make that push to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time.
Well, I thought we'd talk more about Thanksgiving later on in the podcast, Neil, but for this bit, I wanted to talk about Black Friday, which leads into Cyber Monday, and week 13 of the NFL has Cyber Monday on it. And while this podcast is coming out on a Tuesday, that offer of Cyber Monday is actually extending in for the rest of the week. So did you know that means there's a 70% discount on season pro subscriptions on NFL Game Pass?
I did, yeah, because it's in the script you sent me. It says the benefits of Season Pro subscriptions are access to all the games throughout the regular season, playoffs and Super Bowl 56 live on demand. Catch-up options are the most extensive. Full game replay, coaches film, gaming 40 is only on Pro and Essential, and free subs can also watch Sunday in 60 and 5 minute highlights. I've taken your voiceover, so you read the last line.
Well, before I get to that last line, I just wanted to say about what I did on Game Pass this week, actually, because you know I've been doing a lot of I've been doing a lot of those documentaries on the NFL originals and the NFL films and whatnot. But then this week, where it really benefited was normally I just watch the highlights, but then I was able to do the Gaming 40 on the Bucks because, as you know, I'm a glory hunter and
that's wherever, your team now.
Wherever the Super Bowl goes, I'm there, right? So
fantastic. We nearly went to the bottom of a lake last year, so that would have been where you ended up. So
I'd be putting on my scuba diving gear. That game was crazy, right? The Colts Bucks back and forth, and
it was, yes. And the Bucks found a way, as good teams do. So I think they're going to be there near the end of the season, and Bill Belichick's New England Patriots against Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. Yes, please sign me up.
Well, you'd love to see that on NFL Game Pass, wouldn't you?
Oh, my goodness, that would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And it's available across all devices. I stole your last line.
Well, see, I was going to get to that, but I was going to say, like, normally I watch these highlights, but then I did the game in 40 this week. It was absolutely brilliant because obviously the games are long, and for someone like myself who's still getting used to it, I just thought it's brilliant seeing a game
they
like that that's condensed into those 40 minutes and you're still getting all the drama of it, because then what I've done on the back of that as well is I did the Packers-Rams game, another high-scoring game, which for fans alike, I guess, it's always good to see the teams just going at each other.
It is, and it's the best way for me to do my research. I get to watch a lot of games in 40 minutes each time, so yeah, it's perfect.
Excellent. Right, well, I'll let you get back to Matt Smith, Neil.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Tell me about the... obviously, you can do a ton of prep, you know, and you knew about Justin Herbert because you knew he was the first round pick. He was a top 10 pick. You can do a ton of prep, though, preparing for a game to go one way and then it goes the other. And I'm thinking about Justin Herbert's debut game, his first start in the NFL. I did this podcast with Austin Eckler. Austin said they didn't even know. The players didn't even know he was going to be starting. Because of what happens to Tyrod Taylor, he gets the injection. He's out of the game. You're actually at a part of a. Well, you could be at a part of a historic thing. You know, Justin Herbert looks the real deal. So this is his first start. Must be quite. Again, there's adrenaline to that. It's live sport. You don't know what's going to happen. You got to be ready. But that was quite a story that unfolded.
We didn't know. We were in the booth, and you know, I'll reach down and grab it. So I have. You know, when you do a game. I have what's called a board. So this is kind of how you call a game. This is how I set my board up. Those are a bunch of names. Oh, wait, that's upside down. So there we go. So I've got my board in front of me, and here at quarterback, this says Ben Roethlisberger because they just played the Steelers on Sunday night, but it says Tyrod Taylor, and kickoff. Chargers are coming out on the field, and I'm looking in, you know, Tyrod Taylor, first home start for the Chargers, coming off a victory against Cincinnati, and Daniel Jeremiah, DJ, is looking at me. He's going, he's pointing at the field because he doesn't want to correct. You never want to correct someone on the air. You're trying to let them correct themselves. So he's pointing down there, and I've got my binoculars because our broadcast booth is way up at SoFi. And I looked down. I was like, well, maybe. I said, turns out Justin Herbert's starting this game, coming out for the first snap. And DJ says, you know, this it's the Chiefs. You got to pull out all the stops, you know, because the Chiefs were already in the midst of their dynastic run here. So he's like, maybe they're trying to catch him off guard. The athleticism of Herbert with the big arm, you know, this could be a trick play to get him started, get him on their heels, look for him to run tempo here before the Chiefs can change out some personnel. We thought it was maybe a trick play, not a trick play, but just trying to catch him on their heels.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, next play's out there. And we're trying to put it together as this drive is unfolding. And remember on that first drive, he ends up rushing in for a score and you know, he marches 75 yards down the field for a touchdown. So now we're in the middle of this. We're like, well, I guess they just never told anyone that Herbert was going to be the starter. Color me surprised. And we were off, you know, and here we are 25 starts later, I think it is, or 26 starts later. And he's in the conversation as maybe the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're witnessing something special? I mean, you watch him from afar and he looks like he has something. I was talking to Jared Cook a few weeks ago. Jared's been over to London a couple of times. Justin Herbert doesn't really want to be a star, but he is.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I think, you know, I said, I don't know if it's reluctant, if it's, I don't know the best word to put on it, because when he does get in front of the camera, he's great. He's engaging. He's self-deprecating. It is not short answers. There is some cliche in there. I think he's still a little protected about, you know, I'm not going to give you anything that you're going to be able to run with for the rest of the week. But he doesn't enjoy, I don't think he enjoys it. I think he, cause every one of his answers always starts with a teammate, you know, like, well, you know, that's Mike Williams running an unbelievable route and I've just put it into a place and he's the one that has to go up and get, or, you know, my offensive line did a great job. I think he's very uncomfortable with the praise that he receives. And I'll tell you, I know some people that have worked around him and I think part of that is he has just got this incredible thirst and quest for perfection. And I think, you know, like we were talking about, you know, with your voice, when you go back and hear it, it doesn't sound like what you thought it sounded like. And you kind of feel like, oh, I didn't do a good job on that. I think he really struggled with trying to realizing you're not going to have a perfect game. It is not possible in the NFL. The other side of the ball, the people on the other side of the ball are too talented for them not to make plays against you and to mess this thing up a little bit throughout the course of these 60 minutes. So I think he still is like, you know, I could have played that better. I could have done that better and that better. And I think he latches onto a lot of that. And so it's uncomfortable for him to accept praise when he feels like he could have done things better. But he's special. Don't get it twisted, Neil. He is special.
Yeah, he certainly looks it. What about you're very uniquely placed then. You mentioned you work for the Lakers, you work in baseball as well. To me, and I've only ever worked in the NFL, but it seems like the NFL is the great soap opera. Because even in the off season, there's always something. And this season, this 2021 season is incredible. You can't trust anyone to win from week to week. You don't know who's going to do what. Is it more of a soap opera than the other sports, or are a lot of the American sports that way in the off seasons and stuff?
Yeah, I would say they all have a little bit of that to them, because for whatever reason, people, and I think it's the proliferation of fantasy sports that's led to it. Everybody thinks they're a general manager and that they could make the best trades and sign the best players better than the people that are in those positions. But sir, I mean, you know, we call the NFL the greatest reality show on TV. It definitely has more drama. And I think also, Neil, a big part of that is it is so far and away. It's not just the most popular sport. It's the most popular thing in America. Like any television show, like nothing is remotely close. Like the top television shows every single week are Sunday Night Football, the Sunday afternoon game, the Sunday morning game. You know, those national broadcasts are all the Monday Night Football game, the Thursday. Those are all your top five shows every single week. So I think, you know, Americans are more invested in it. And I think that leads to the idea that, yes, there is this incredible soap opera and player movement. And, you know, I'll tell you, it really seemed like I would say maybe about 10 years ago, we finally kind of got past it. But there was quite a while there where players were getting into a lot of trouble off the field. And I think that discouraged people from following the soap opera in the offseason, because it was always so negative. It was almost like a running joke. Oh, let's read the, you know, the police blotter. How many NFL players are in it this time? And that's, you know, that's no longer the case. You know, we've kind of moved past that. But yes, I think what, and I don't know if it was Roger Goodell or who you would give credit to, if it's Paul Tagliabue, but they have done a masterful job of creating a year-round news cycle. This game is only played from the first week of September until the second week now, instead of second week of February, from mid-February until, you know, the first regular season game kicks off, it is still all gas, no break NFL.
Yeah, it really is. Two more, and then we're finished. This is a hard one because there's so many plays you will have witnessed and so many things. I always ask media this. I don't always ask players this, but do you have a wow moment that you think when you were watching a Super Bowl or a game? I don't want to steer you to an answer, but I'll give you my indication. My one, I was covering the Super Bowl. I was on the sidelines for Sky Sports, right on the goal line when Malcolm Butler jumped Russell Wilson. Right.
It's funny. I knew that's exactly what you were going to say.
Right. I knew that's exactly. But that's where most people do go. Are there any others like that, that where you just like, wow, what have I just said here? Whether it's the Minneapolis Miracle, I don't know. What right. any that spring to mind? And that's tough, I know, yeah, because we watch so many plays.
So I have a couple that certainly stand out. One is in college football, and it is a historic rivalry at a historic stadium for a powerhouse that was just in the, you know, burgeoning part of their, you know, kind of dynastic run. And it's at Alabama, and I'm calling Alabama versus Tennessee. Tennessee's head coach is this guy named Lane Kiffin, who is, so, you know who he is, your listeners probably don't, but just imagine the snarkiest, smarmiest, most arrogant, doesn't give a rip about what anybody thinks head coach. And he strolls in his first year as the head coach of Tennessee against, not arguably, but the greatest college football coach in the history of the game, Nick Saban, who a lot of your listeners will know from his short time with the Dolphins. And that Tennessee team has given them everything they can handle. And to the point where they're only down by 2 points and they have got a game-winning field goal. And this is at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. People are free. They cannot believe this individual they hate more than anything who has infiltrated their slice of paradise, the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, and the American South from the West Coast in California, having been assistant under Pete Carroll at USC. This guy's going to come in to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, talking all his trash and get out of here with a win. This can't happen. And a defensive tackle for, and I can still remember the call, and it wasn't scripted. I just remember saying, and the big body of Terrence Cody has saved the game, because he just burst through the line, blocked the field goal, and all of just all the stands pour in. They pour out in the streets. It becomes this giant celebration. So that was... Wow. That yep. was my college moment. My pro moment would be on the call 2018, Kansas City, Thursday night football. Chargers come back, the fourth down conversion to Travis Benjamin from Phillip Rivers, and they decide to go for two and the win. And Mike Williams ends up getting the 2-point conversion wide open. And again, not scripted, I can still remember just that call and just how surprised I was and how unbelievable this comeback was. Just the, if you ever look at that drive, that play by play on that drive of what they had to do in order to get to that position, it was just ridiculous. The plays that had to be made by Phillip Rivers in that offense. And I can still remember just sitting there seeing it happen, screaming, it's good, because it's 2-point conversion, not a touchdown. So in my brain, I'm always reminding myself, hey, remember, it's not a touchdown. It's not a touchdown. It's good. This is an after point after attempt. So I scream, it's good. It's good. And again, I can still remember. I don't know why, but I can. Mike Williams with the grab and layout. And then I just said the closest defender was in Kansas City, Kansas. And for people that don't know, Kansas City has two parts. It's on right. a state line, Kansas yep. and Missouri. The Chiefs play in Kansas City, Missouri. So that was my call, because it was a busted coverage. And it has actually kind of remained. You'll see that, and they'll line up my call instead of the national television call to it.
Yes.
So that's probably
where
my...
That's where the team radio stuff is good, isn't it? Because you can then put it to yeah. the pictures, and it tells a greater story sometimes.
Much, much better, yeah. So that's probably been the call that has lived on for me than in my 5 years of doing this more than any other. So that certainly was a wow moment to have witnessed that. And then, you know, I'm on the team plane flying back, so everybody's freaking out.
Brilliant.
They're in control of the AFC. They're the number one seed in the AFC at that point. It's mid-December or early December, so like there's all this emotion. So that probably goes, you know, that adds to it, that's for sure.
So you've just changed my last question. Okay. So I'm just going to do a Phillip Rivers follow-up. Phillip Rivers on the plane after a game like that. I mean, Phillip's one of the nicest guys, fun guy. So what was he like, and what is he like? What was he like to work with?
The best, just as genuine, as wonderful of a guy as there was. He and I would talk, not a lot, but I would say every season we would probably end up in the galley maybe two or three different times, just drinking beer and just kind of talking about life, usually a little bit about football. But I'd say more than anything, it was just kind of family conversation. But I distinctly remember after that game, because a lot of times he wouldn't walk back. He would just, because the way that the plane is stacked is you have the coaches in one area, the players in another, and then staff in another. So, and we were always in the back. So the players would have to come back, and we're certainly not going to go up into their area. It's theirs. It's their private spot. So he ended up, he and I ended up having a long conversation after that exact game. And I think there was just, guys were so out of their minds and there was so much emotion that I think he just wanted to kind of pull the ripcord and get out of it for a second. And I just happened to, I always like to stand up instead of sit, you know, it's just more comfortable for me to just kind of walk around and maybe drink a beer or two on the way back. And I was there alone, and we ended up just kind of talking about that game and him finding Travis Benjamin on that fourth. That's probably the most football I talked with him.
I hosted an event with him in Wembley Stadium before they played against the Titans. So the second time he played in London. And it was an invite-only event. So there were the fans that were in there, and there were like two or three fans that didn't get in because it was a ticketed event. I saw Philip Rivers afterwards walk out. Normally those guys are hustled out. There they go. He talked to those fans that didn't get in for 20 minutes. The fans that didn't get in got more of Philip Rivers than the ones that sat in there for an hour.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, no, it's genuine. And I think that's one thing that would always upset me about all the commentary about Philip is, oh, what a bad guy. And, you know, he's always running his mouth. And, you know, I hate that guy. And it's like, you have no idea. That guy,
right.
He just loves football. Like, that's it. Like, when he's in the middle of it, he is the ultimate competitor. And, like, that's just him. Like, he's so geeked about being on the football field and trying to get the win that that's just the way it manifests itself, you know, that energy. And anybody that's ever been around him says the same thing. You know, they're like, oh God, Phillip's the greatest guy ever. Cause he is, he's genuine. He is, there is no pretense. There is nothing fake about that. He is just, he puts it all out there for you. Does not care. You know, always wears the Latin, hat. When we would go on the road, I'll leave you with this, Neil. If this in fact is the last question, when we would go on the road, Phillip would either himself or have someone from the team track down a Latin mass. He wanted to go to mass in Latin. He is a devout Catholic, and someone would have to scour wherever we were going, the greater, to see if in fact there was a Catholic church that was doing a Latin mass. And if they weren't, they would have to start making calls like, hey, do you have anyone that might be able to give Philip a Latin mass? Like and he never ran away from that, never hit it, but also never tried to force it upon you. It was just like, hey, did you, where were you? Oh, I went to, you know, St. Catherine's because they had a Latin mass this morning at 5 a.m. It's just to think of Philip Rivers, this giant 6'6" guy with probably, you know, septuagenarians and octogenarians, five or six of them, just sitting in the pew and taking communion. Brilliant. And doing his thing. It's hilarious.
There you are. Thanks for listening to today's episode. No mailbag this week, but thank you to Matt Money Smith, who was fantastic. We'll be back with another special guest next time on the Neil Reynolds podcast. Until then, bye for now. To the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you would like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.